right, thanks for joining us for episode 3 of Murphy's Law Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Murphy. With me today, our guest is Dave Delaney, our attorney that has been assisting us through multiple processes through the last year at the Iron Pig with regards to Liquor Commission, Health Department, Department of Agriculture, MyOSHA, lots of different agencies. David has decided to come in today at my request to kind of give us a quick background of where we have been, where we are with our court date Monday morning, right here in Otsego County, and where we hope to go with everything. So thanks for joining me today, Dave. I really appreciate you taking the time out of you. I know you're extremely busy schedule.
Ian, thank you. And I appreciate the kind words, and it's always about the client and the things that you've done and not the things that I've done. I think that I wanted to get right to this in the case. One thing that you and I have always talked about is explaining something so the guy at the bar can understand.
Yeah.
That is really difficult to do, even with lawyers. And so what I want to talk about today, which is at the core of everything that's going on out there in America with the pandemic, with the vaccine mandates, with the mask mandates, with the closing of bars and restaurants, is all based upon the separation of powers. And it's not the most exciting topic. People want to talk about the events and people being arrested for not getting vaccines and losing their jobs. But let's go back in history to a time that everybody knows, and that's the 4th of July. Okay, that's 1776, the Declaration of Independence. Everyone knows that what happened then was we left England. But the question is, why did the founding fathers leave England? Well, the answer comes several years later, in about 1787. And that's when the U.S. Constitution was drafted. And it was drafted by a great scholar named James Madison. James Madison was only 36 years old when he basically wrote the Constitution with others.
I'm behind the curve.
Yeah, and so he's just a phenomenal insight.
That's incredible. 36
years old.
I didn't
right.
know that.
You know, I was looking it up last night to find out. And, you know, James Madison gets some credit. We know Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin and all those great founding fathers. But what happened with James Madison was he learned that the king had all the power. And that's called tyranny, okay, when one person has all the power. And so he wanted to fix that. And he came up with this genius idea of three branches of government. You pick an odd number. In case there's a conflict, two of the three branches may succeed, much the way judges are built. And those three branches are the legislative, the executive, and the judicial. Now, I'm probably dating myself, but that cartoon we saw when we were kids, I'm Just a Bill, on Capitol Hill, is so important now.
Google it if you haven't seen it. Watch it. Share it. Watch it. Share it with your kids. Watch it again.
When we get through separation of powers, and then maybe in the next segment we talk about what happened to Ian, you'll be able to plug in precisely the imbalance that's going on right now. So many people know, but let's go through it. This is your eighth grade civics class. The legislature writes the law. Okay, we get that. That's Congress. Who enforces that law? That's the executive branch. Who interprets that law? That's the judicial branch. Now, let me give you an example that will make sense to you. Now, I'm pro-law enforcement, but using law enforcement helps illustrate what we're talking about. The legislature determines that the speed limit is 75 miles an hour. Okay, we get that. We see the sign posted. They write the law. Who enforces that law? The police. But they're in the executive branch. Who interprets that law? The courts. The judicial branch. So it's written by the legislature. You violate the speed law, you get a ticket, but you still get to go over to judicial to get an interpretation. Is that a reasonable speed? Which is what they do. Maybe it should be 70. You get the right to a hearing and some due process. And as long as those branches stay in their respective lanes of government, because they are separate but equal, your government will work. So you always have a remedy. You can challenge the legislative action. You can challenge executive, and you can even appeal on judicial. So in my scenario, that power to write law, and here comes the imbalance, has shifted over to the executive. So you're driving on I-75. You get pulled over. You're not speeding. And the officer tells you that today's speed limit is 60. You say, who did that? I did.
Yeah.
Okay. Then tomorrow, only the northbound cars can drive. You can't drive in the southbound lane. The day after that, you can only have no more than two passengers in your car. And only the blue cars can drive on the southbound lane. And so who's writing those laws? The police. What branch are they in? The executive. So now they're writing the law and they're enforcing the law. You cannot have both those powers. The King of England did. He wrote the law, he enforced the law, and he interpreted the law and placed you in the dungeon. So we left England because of that. So you cannot have the tyranny that exists there. So Abraham Lincoln said this, if you want to know the merit of a person, give them power.
Mm.
Okay, that is something so important to know. So what are the first three words of the Constitution? Everybody knows it, but they don't know they know it. We the people. Followed up shortly thereafter by secure the blessings of liberty. When you put the power in one hand, that's when the tyranny comes here. And that's what's happening now, is that the legislature has written laws to be enforced by the executive branch. The executive branch is taking those laws, and some of them are broad, and each day rewriting a law in this case. When we talk about the Iron Pig, we will talk about how that happened in this case, and there was no legislature involved. It was the executive branch writing the law and enforcing the law, and the courts really haven't caught up to that yet, and that's when you have that that tyranny that exists there. So that's really important. And so if you're looking at this area of the law about the vaccines and the masks and all those things, do any research on the separation of powers and understand those three branches of government, and then find out who's writing the law and who's enforcing the law. And when we get into the next segment of this, you'll be able to, it'll make sense to you, because a lot of it doesn't make sense. When you go to your school board meetings, for example, the school board is in the executive branch. They're writing laws. Who's enforcing the laws? The school.
The school, yeah.
See, the power's in the same hands, and you can't have that. So I think that with this as a premise, that when we go forward on this, we start plugging in what happened, it'll really come forward to you. And this is what we're challenging in court next week, is this, and I can break that down in the next segment. Or if you wanted to add something, Ian and I have talked about this forever, and it is still relevant now. The courts are issuing decisions now that talk about the separation of powers. The federal courts, the vaccine mandates, the U.S. Supreme Court. So it may not be the most exciting topic, but it's the most important.
It is really important. And it, one of the decisions you probably are referencing was that Missouri Circuit Court case.
Yes.
That came out that ended up citing Carl the Barber's case. And one of the judges ends up making a comment about the violation of the separation of powers. And he ends up saying, you know, even a middle school civic student can understand the violation that is happening here. So it is very important. And one of the other reasons why I did want to have you on is there are plenty of people that have said, you know, that we're COVID deniers. We don't care about our community or any of these things. And the reason why we're fighting is simply because we disagree with the mask mandate, or we disagree with the shutting down of this, when really it's this issue right here that you just talked about. When we start to wither away at those separation of powers, that's a very slippery slope. And I think people have a hard time getting around that because they may not necessarily understand exactly what the separation of powers is, even in a time of crisis. We'll talk a little bit more about this in the next segment, as well as some other things. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to see one of our awesome commercials from the Iron Pig. We'll be right back.
The Iron Pig Smokehouse in downtown Gaylord features Low and Slow barbecue beef brisket, pulled pork, and chicken. Order a delicious burger, pizza, tacos, and more at the Iron Pig Smokehouse. Open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Dine in, take out. Delivery available at ironpigsmoke.com.
All right, welcome back to Murphy's Law Podcast with your host, Ian Murphy. We're here today with Dave Delaney, Iron Pig attorney, famous infamous. I don't know what we are at this point. It doesn't really matter. I did also just happen to notice I am wearing the illegal barbecue t-shirt today, just for you, since you convinced me to do all this. Just kidding. But anyway, so back to actually what's important. Some of the things that we had seen early on in the pandemic with the governor's use of executive orders, and what transpired from Carl the Barber's case and those emergency orders and how it got to is kind of important, because his case sets a little bit of the groundwork for our angle of attack, if you will.
Yeah, it did. And Carl the Barber, I think, was instrumental in giving the courts confidence when it came to COVID, because, as you said in an earlier segment, for me and for you, the case is not about COVID. It's about the separation of powers that we talked about in the last segment. And if you didn't see the last segment, go back and take a look at that, because it became the foundation for Carl the Barber. It's still the foundation today. And 5 years from now, it may be a different disorder. You know, we've certainly been through the Black Plague and the Spanish Flu and things like that. But it's about the government's powers staying in balance. So,
and let me interject really quick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I will say this. Really what this is about is the manner in which they went and used these laws and these mechanisms and the overreach. There's a better way to do it. The legislature needs to be involved. That is really what we're saying, is go to the proper branch and get it done. I remember reading through Carl's case, and part of the state's argument was the legislature can't act quick enough in the time of an emergency. And that was just proven wrong. But I didn't mean to interject, but that's one thing to me, is it's just not about that. It's about how they're just abusing this power.
Well, and you never have to ask permission. We know each other really well on when you want to weigh in on things like that. But I think that now, right now, the most important branch, and they get most of the kidding and razzing, is the legislative branch, okay, your lawmakers. And the lawmakers at the state level. They are the most important branch right now. The federal level, you really don't see as much of. They're in the news all the time, but it's your local legislators that really dictate this path, because they write the law.
Yeah.
And what's important about that is that they are elected officials, okay, and they have to run for re-election every 2 years. The founding fathers did that for a reason. They're in heavy rotation, meaning they're accountable. You don't like what's going on, you can pick up the phone and you can call that congressman or congresswoman.
It's that citizen legislature thing.
It's, you know, we the people.
We need more of that. And I think, you know, I don't want to get off on term limits or anything, but I think that's part of what makes that branch exclusively unique, is that frequent turnover.
Correct. And without getting too far into this, the Congress turns over every 2 years, and then the senators, I think, are every 4 to 6 years. So it's a little slower. It's a slower cook at the Senate level, but you've got the two chambers of the House. And we'll cover this a little more in detail in a moment. What's happening now is employees, unelected officials, are writing laws, which we're really going to get into, because we've already covered the separation of powers. Let's talk about, having already gone through the separation of powers, what happened in Michigan, which was really looked at across the country, and that's in 2020, the Michigan Supreme Court. So in 1945, the legislature wrote a law, which is what they do. It was an anti-rioting statute, and I didn't really know that there were riots in 45, certainly in the 60s and things like that, but they had issues back in 1945. So Congress, meaning well, wrote a state law that gave some law writing power to the governor, because they said, if there's ever an emergency and there's a riot, we want you to step in. Close roads, close streets, whatever's reasonable and necessary. Take over the state, because this could be happening so fast. I mean, 1945 was a long time ago. World War II.
Race riots? Is that really what it was?
I think so, yes.
If I remember right, it seems like that's what it was. I mean, Detroit, I mean, it was so tumultuous in those times. Anyways, I can imagine that. But
And Congress felt at that time that they wanted the governor to help out. And so they gave these, they call them emergency powers to the governor, which included the governor interpreted it as law writing. Okay, we talked earlier that belongs to Congress for a good reason. So those, that law sat on the books and was never used. I mean, maybe it came across one time where there was a county that needed some road closed and things like that, but it had to be dusted off. Enter the pandemic, March of 2020. So there are actually two laws on the books, the Emergency Management Act and the Emergency Powers Act. The Management Act came along in 1976. That one said, Governor, you have some powers to take over the state in an emergency, but it's only good for 28 days. The 1945 didn't have that limitation, which we will talk about with what your case is about. So it shifted law writing over to the executive branch. Here we go. This is the separation of powers. In legal terms, that's called non-delegation. You cannot delegate your powers to someone else, okay? And the judicial branch can't give it to the legislature. They've got to stay separate, okay? I mean, there's minor exceptions, like the Secretary of State can draft rules and regulations, you know, when your driver's license expires, when you have to renew, these little nominal, non-affecting powers. So because the governor seized on the 1945 law, she began to issue these executive orders. And everyone knows about those. You can't put a power boat in the water. You can't go to Walmart during certain times.
You can't buy paint.
Yeah. Can't visit your grandparents. Okay, those are laws being written by the executive branch. So backing up just a little bit, Carl the Barber was the first one that really got the most public exposure on that, because it was the executive branch that wrote a law that said you have to close your barber shop because of COVID. Now, many people may think that was a good idea, but that isn't the issue. The issue is it lawful? Even if it's not healthy and it's dangerous, the legislature's job is to meet immediately and pass a law, and they're going to. If there's a pandemic and things like that, they're not going to sit on their hands and let that happen. But they didn't take any action because they felt like the process was proceeding along. So back to the power in the same hands, if you watched the first episode, the tyranny. So the executive branch through the Department of Health and Human Services, and you and I were talking on the break, I went and printed all the agencies in the state of Michigan. This is all of them under the executive branch. So it's all one branch. But it was the executive Department of Health and Human Services that was writing the law. And it was the state police and the attorney general, executive, that's all that matters, writing the law. It's like your restaurant. Whether it's a dishwasher, a cook, or a manager, they're all under you. And it comes to you. Mm-hmm. You can't say, well, that was my waitress that did that, sir. It's on you.
Right.
So it's on the executive branch. So they were writing the law, and they were enforcing the law. And they went in, and they closed Carl's barbershop. And he said no. Enter now who? The judicial branch. See how they're co-equal? One gets to jump in and say no. The judicial branch said no. I don't see that you have the right to do this. The executive branch appealed up the judicial branch. And the Court of Appeals said, yes, you do. Judges are going to disagree. It ended up in the Michigan Supreme Court in October of 2020. And they abrogated and struck down the 45 law. They didn't interpret it. They got rid of it.
Got rid of it, yeah.
Because it was unlawful for the legislature to give law writing power to the legislature. For example, the legislature can't give themselves enforcement power. You're driving along and your congressman pulls you over. Ian, you were speeding today. Who are you? Congressman Jones, I wrote the law at 75 miles an hour. Well, that's the police's job. No, I've taken that over. They cannot. When you do that, you get back to the king. So what happened was the governor's emergency powers were gone. And the governor pivoted to another law called the Department of Health and Human Services, Michigan Public Health Code. And within that public health code, the governor interpreted rights to sort of start to regulate and write laws all over again. And that's still going on now. and we're getting involved in lawsuits to address that. But back on Kyle the Barber for a moment, the Michigan Supreme Court also heard his case and reversed it and closed it and sent it back down, and then it disappeared. That was before the 1945 got shut down. But what we take from this is that when the three branches are left to work, they work well. The legislator unintentionally gave law writing powers to the executive, and the judiciary fixed it. That's exactly what James Madison wanted to happen, is for the ship to right side itself here, so that those things don't happen. And that word tyranny comes out of this. And I think at a future segment, we'll be able to walk through exactly what happened to the Iron Pig.
In just a few minutes, we'll be right back.
The Iron Pig Smokehouse in downtown Gaylord has an outstanding catering menu for weddings, graduations, parties, and get-togethers. From casual catering to full-service seated meals with bartending, call the Iron Pig Smokehouse, open 7 days a week, online at ironpigsmoke.com.
All right, welcome back to Murphy's Law Podcast, here today with Iron Pig attorney Dave Delaney. We were just talking about briefly the Emergency Management Act, the Emergency Powers of the Governor Act, and how that has preceded what we did and how we've kind of utilized that. So I just wanted to dive right kind of back into that.
Okay, great. And again, if you were able to watch the earlier podcast, if you have an interest in this area, because people have the interest in the volatility and the liquor licenses that were taken, I agree, at the time it wasn't as exciting, but looking back, you know, it was certainly the more eye-catching things. But that separation of powers, that legislative, executive, and judicial are so important, if you're interested in this, to understand that and looking back at those prior podcasts. So moving forward, we talked about the fact that the Michigan Supreme Court did its job, in my view. They balanced out those three branches. The legislative gave power to the governor, the executive branch, unintentionally. And the courts, the judiciary, fixed it just like James Madison wanted,
right?
Those three separate but equal branches. After the governor, they struck down her law writing powers, the governor then went back to what was already on the books for laws. And we were talking a moment ago about the list of Michigan state agencies. These are all under the executive branch. The legislative branch doesn't have any agencies. They have Congress and the Senate. That's it. The courts do have a ladder, if you will, your state court up to your appellate courts. But really, there's no sub-agencies. And by design, the executive branch is supposed to have all of these agencies. But those include the Department of Agriculture. Those are the people that gave Ian his food license. Attorney General, the Department of Health and Human Services. That's an important one for this conversation. The Michigan State Police, the Liquor Control Commission, the Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs.
Laura.
right. And then MIOSHA is going to be in there, all those agencies. And we talked before, their job is to enforce the law, meaning Ian allegedly violated a liquor law that was written by the legislature. That's the job of the legislature. Do not sell alcohol to somebody under 21. That's the law. And if somebody violates that law, what happens then? It goes over to the executive. The executive comes in and enforces it and says, did you sell alcohol to somebody under 21? So see how they're working. The bar owner says, no, I didn't. Well, now what are they going to do? Judiciary. They come in and interpret what's going on. So you've got the three branches all working at the same time. Well, that didn't happen here. The executive began to write laws, which was not their job. Okay, so what? But they're enforcing that. They're writing it and they're enforcing it. Granted, it's different agencies, but it's all executive.
Right.
That's what you have to look at here. It's all executive. So you had the Department of Health and Human Services, executive, writing the laws. And you had the Michigan State Police, Liquor Control, Department of Agriculture, MIOSHA, enforcing that law. it's all the same people. It's as if one person wrote the law and one person enforced it. You cannot have that imbalance. So let me give you an example. The executive branch said no indoor dining. That's a law. They wrote that law. 6 feet apart. They wrote that law. 50% capacity, 25% capacity. Open at 10, close at 11. Open at 10, you know, and on and on and on and on and on. Wear a mask, all these other things.
Sign in.
Sign the. I forgot the sign
in. We need your name. We need your number. It takes more information to come into my restaurant at that time than it did to get into the hospital.
Yes.
Think about that.
And so, you know, driver's licenses, names, and things like that. Now, if the legislative branch, Congress, writes those laws, that's it. You can run to the courts, but you have a remedy. But they have the right to write those laws. And you have the right to vote them out of office if they do that. What's happening over with the executive? Is it an elected official that's writing this? No, it's an employee. One employee at the health department. Because you have your state and local levels.
An appointee.
An appointee. An employee, okay, is sitting down in Congress. This is what the founding fathers intended. I have to get a majority vote of everybody in the House. It then goes to the Senate, layer after layer after layer. And then even the governor has to approve it. So laws are designed to move slowly. Although, in an emergency, Congress would meet at midnight and pass a pandemic law. They would
and
have.
It's proven that they have.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, so the argument that the governor used in the beginning to use and justify using and issuing executive orders because the legislature can't move fast enough is just false.
That is an excellent point and one that is never discussed and one that we
I say that to all of our legislators that I talk to now.
Right.
Said, you guys should be so upset about what she was doing over those executive orders because she's basically saying, you guys aren't good enough at your jobs. We can do it better.
Yeah. What the argument is that the pandemic was so fast moving, and COVID is a disease that is communicable, okay? And it does move quickly. It's highly contagious, but it's not the first time we've dealt with this before. And only the health department, only an employee at the health department can go to her desk, go to his desk, write a law, and tell Ian to close his restaurant at 10 p.m. That's the only remedy we have. And that's not true. The governor of the state of Michigan still has emergency powers right now to close the state of Michigan. They're only good for 28 days, then Congress has to approve it. And if we're in the middle of a pandemic again, do you think that Congress is not going to follow through if people are literally the Black Plague and people are falling down in the streets? They're going to get that done. In addition to that, you've got local boards of commissioners, local boards of health, who are all elected officials. You've got city government, you've got township, you've got municipal, all which have basically emergency powers. So if the county, if your county commissioners in your county wanted to pass a law and meet right now in emergency session, you only need 18 hours under the Open Meetings Act to give notice of a public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the courts would even overlook that if truly this wave was coming through.
Sure.
And we can meet by Zoom. We have to waive the 18. I think the courts would say, you know what, we're going to make an exception. They did anyway.
Right.
The pandemic exceptions were off the charts. And so, but anyway, 18 hours is plenty of time to have. I mean, when the pandemic started, we were kind of slow moving. We didn't close the schools for weeks and weeks and weeks. We didn't close. Bars and restaurants were not closed until November of 2020. We started in March.
Right.
That sounds like 18 hours to me. So getting back to our feet on the ground, the executive branch was writing laws. Okay, now didn't we already cover this in the 1945? Yeah, the 1945 was shut down because the executive was writing laws over here. But these health cases haven't gotten through the courts yet. We're still on the trajectory. The 1945 went through the courts very quickly because it covered from Detroit to the UP.
Right.
It covered everybody's business.
And that was fast, I mean, comparatively, right?
Eight months. Yeah. So it's been probably, it's been over a year now. The health laws started getting used. Once the 1945 was struck down, the executive pivoted to the health laws. And those, you know, your case has been pending for about a year. We're seeing more mass cases and things like that. And let me say that the vaccine cases, if you follow these, what we've been saying in these podcasts, are the same issue, except it's at the federal level. The federal branches, and there's 200 of those under the executive, CDC, EPA, you know them all, Department of Transportation, all these organizations, Social Security Administration, they are writing laws. So it's the same as the state. And those are being challenged for the same reason. Congress did not give this power to the president. Your job's to enforce the law, not to write the law. And the federal courts are starting to rule in favor of Congress. And so if you look at those vaccine cases, there's been a couple of that have gone in the favor of the executive, but most are not. Mm-hmm. What did I want to cover there? So I think the next subject I want to talk about is specifically your case in the court. So we could do that now or in the next segment.
Let's take a real quick break. We're just about at our time limit for this segment. So let's take a quick break, a quick commercial, and we'll come right back. Thanks for joining us on Murphy's Law Podcast.